Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 6, Episode 27, The Art of Arrival, A Modern Irish Imrav. In this episode, I want to tell you the story of my most recent trip to Ireland. Perhaps in some ways it has that feeling of what I did on my summer vacation, but perhaps that's okay. Our most mythic stories from this lifetime come from very special journeys that we had a chance to take and then come back and really actively remember. Before I dive in and share this week's solo episode with you of my most recent travels, I want to invite you to join us this fall when the Writer's Knot welcomes new members. This is the global writing community where the mythic imagination meets creative expression. We meet online each week to write together, talk together, and grow together. I offer a new set of carefully crafted writing prompts for each session. And in this upcoming season, which runs from September to the very start of January, we'll be exploring the archetypal power of the landscape. So much more than mere setting, the land shapes the imagination, culture, and relationships that we all thrive in throughout our lives. It holds the stories of the ancestors and the memories of your own life. In the story I'm about to tell you, I'll mention many times that the people I got to spend time with on Clare Island were like old, old friends, though we had only met on Zoom through the Bard Mythology summer school. Well, there's a similar sort of phenomenon that happens in The Writer's Knot. Though we've been meeting online for 8 years, there are lifelong friendships and connections created through the membership in this group. So if the story that I tell inspires you and you are really feeling called to join a writing group in this new season that will invite you to explore your own inner landscape and inspires your creativity in some new ways, I would love to have you with us in The Writer's Knot. In September, beginning on September 10th, we'll be forming two groups. One meets at noon on Wednesdays and the other on Fridays at 3 p.m., both times Eastern. You can find all the details at marisagowdy.com, or you can, of course, check the link in the show notes. So with that said, with that invitation issued, I want to tell you a bit about the invitation that I accepted to return to Ireland just last month in July. Now, I had been there recently, which was in and of itself sort of a miraculous thing that I was getting to go again so soon. But last October, when I traveled there and came home, I wrote a Substack piece that I called The Art of a Graceful Homecoming. In many ways, it was about the grueling ride home from JFK across the New York City madness. It was about the way that three hawks guided my way. And despite all the bloody traffic that clogged those roads, and despite all my exhausted confusion, I felt safe. I felt greeted by the guardians of the land where I had been born. I knew we would find our way home. Like I said, I couldn't believe at the time, if you had told me, that I would return to Ireland just 9 months later. I'd gone a decade and a half previously in my life between trips, but here I was. And perhaps there's something to be said that there were seeds planted in October that came to fruition when I got to go back in July. I have gone and I have returned. And this time, upon my return, I'm not dwelling so much on what it meant to arrive back in the States, but I'm thinking about what it meant to arrive there. Because as I'm seeing it now, I didn't arrive once, but at least 17 times. I want to give you a preview of what's coming up next week, which is very much a compliment to what you're about to hear now. In next week's episode, you'll hear from our storyteller in residence, Erica O'Reilly, and she shares her story of how hard it was to leave. Because it just so happens that we both went on our own July sojourns to the land that is the source of so much of our imbus, of our dawn. That's our sense of inspiration and our own soul's purpose. We had such different trips, and I'm excited we can share the stories of both of them, because it just seems to add to the sense that there's always an infinite variety in the tapestries we weave, in the knotwork that we're creating here. So, like I said, we'll talk about how hard it is to leave Ireland next week. But for now, I want to talk a bit about how hard and wonderful it is to truly arrive. I'm telling you this story in the spirit of an Imhoff, and that's one type of old Irish tale that narrates a hero's sea journey to the other world. And in it, I'm going to tell you 17 distinct moments of my arrival in Ireland. I'm a bit influenced by the old tale, The Voyage of Maeldun, which is probably the most famous of these Imhoff tales, but I'm only partially inspired. As I'll tell you in a bit, that particular story is deeply problematic, and I can't say it's a story that I love. But I do love that there's an entire category of tale in the Irish tradition devoted to wild voyages full of unexpected arrivals. Because I knew that arriving would be important before I even got on the plane. Shortly before I left, back in June, a sister myth worker, Tracy Chipman, invited me onto her podcast. It's called A Year and a Day. She invited me to explore the archetype of the mother and that beloved tale of the Selkie. If you're at all familiar with knotwork or with Celtic mythology in general, you'll know that story of the seal woman quite well. And actually, you've already met Tracy here on the show. She came onto Knotwork about a month or two ago and told us a story that she had collected from the Outer Hebrides that calls together the Kalyak and a fabulous sort of sea journey as well. But in this particular conversation that I had with Tracy over on her show, and I will link to that episode in the show notes here, we ended up talking about the art of arrival. My upcoming trip was really present in the room for us, particularly because in this conversation that was focused on mothering and motherhood, we were both very aware that I was about to go to Ireland on my own. And even though it was a solo trip, myself as a mother was utterly central to everything about the journey. In my most recent trips over there in 2018, and then the trip I mentioned in October, I brought a kid with me. The last time I'd been to Ireland before that, 2003, with an old boyfriend. 15 years without being back to my most favorite place on earth. And then two trips that had to be designed around accommodating the needs and interests and moods of children. I've joked a lot that I'm going to have to write my own guidebook to what it's like to mother in sacred spaces. Because, you know, I think I earned a lot of stripes the time that I brought my then 8-year-old into Owenachat, that famous, infamous cave of the Morrigan. And it was quite the experience and certainly something we'll never forget. And if you told my younger self that was going to happen, I never would have believed you. But it did. And mothering in Ireland has been wonderful. But this time was going to be different. This time I would get to arrive as myself. So past experience, including my own longstanding trouble that I've tended to have with feeling fully present in places that I've long visited in my heart, I knew I needed to tend to my sense of arrival on the land of Ireland. And that wasn't just about navigating the airport and finding my friend who was there to pick me up, but really being conscious about how I would arrive on the motherland, how I would find myself most fully in the arms of Mama Eru. So talking on Tracy's podcast at the time, it was easy enough to speak in hypotheticals about what might happen on a trip that was still 2 weeks away. I think I said something along the lines of, I was actively wondering how I could ask the people I travel with how they could help me arrive and be there if I needed that sort of support. And it was kind of a bold thing to say at that moment, considering I'd never actually met the people I would be spending those 10 days with. Though, of course, as I said up at the top, this was a trip very much forged by the powerful alliances we can create on Zoom and WhatsApp and all of our myriad ways of connecting. Because we hadn't yet breathed the same air. But the connections we make in the digital realms, you know this as well as I do, they're often just as real and even more than something that can happen in a restaurant or when you meet somebody in your town. So I am deeply, deeply grateful to say that, as I'd hoped and predicted, I really was going to Ireland to meet soul companions who would help me arrive and help me do it more gracefully than I ever could have done on my own. And whether I needed to ask overtly or whether the people I was with just seemed to offer a sense of welcoming and presencing that was so real and so true that I got what I needed. I got ways to arrive without even asking. So it was on the fourth day of my 10-day trip that I declared what I considered the 17th arrival. Was I really counting them all? Not exactly. Then, when I went back to trace my first few days, I was more than pleased by the math. So I offer you this in-depth tour of my first few days in Ireland. And it's going to span from being collected at the airport in Dublin to making it to my friend's place in Lewisburg to being part of the Bard Mythologies summer school on Clare Island. Let's go. But first, let me just give you a little glimpse into why 17. Now, it's a number that has a lot to do with my own personal mythology. I actually described that in depth in a recent episode I called Gemini Mythologies. My mother and I were born on the 17th day of June. And as you'll hear, I felt my late mother's presence so strongly through so much of this journey. That number 17 also appears in the myth of the voyage of Meldoon, who I mentioned at the top. Now, this young man, he went out upon an Imrav, a sea journey, in the company of precisely 17 sailors, as he'd been directed. But then, when his three foster brothers forced their way on board because they were so angry they'd been left ashore, the adventure, or rather the misadventure, really began. So I mention this story here, but I'm not going to tell it in depth. And I'm going to admit that I don't really have a great love for it. I find all the stops that he made kind of tedious. And I recognize the irony as I'm about to ask you to care about my own 17 anecdotal stops. But I hope that in what I'm doing here, I can offer enough context and meaning and make it all a bit more impactful than asking you to attend to a tale of a guy who visited a whole bunch of islands that were full of apples and beasts and maidens, and that then essentially brought them all back to exactly where they started. Because presumably this story endured and really got people's attention because of the storyteller's skill at the time, as well as a context that we know we couldn't even begin to access, whether it's multiple layers of meaning as to the places he went, or just the fact that we know that ancient humor, or even humor from a century or two ago, doesn't tend to translate now. The stuff we laugh at is very much of the moment. We'll get to that idea in a little while, too. But ultimately, I'm most ambivalent about this story of Meldoon, because it forces us into this very of-the-moment question that we've essentially come to understand as, can you still love the art and hate the artist? So in this case, Meldoon's quest is undertaken in order to avenge his father's death. Seems fair, very much a reason why lots of heroes went forth and did their heroic deeds. But that all gets a little less noble when you realize that in the first few passages of the story, you hear about how Meldoon discovered that his loving foster family was not his family of origin. And then he's told by his foster mother that his real birth mother was actually a nun who was raped by a warrior chieftain. And then he goes and visits his birth mother. Essentially, his mother says, you're better off not knowing him, and he's dead anyway. And then she goes on to tell him that, in what's rather a divine twist, this evil father figure was actually killed by marauders, and they did it by burning down a church over his head. So again, I'm not going to get into the specifics of this tale, and I'll admit that I really haven't studied it in a great deal of depth, but I just want to invite you to be with the sense that there is some sort of tradition here of coming back and sharing a narrative of a journey, and that 17 has its own magic, and that the myth work that we do in order to connect to others, to convey our own contemporary or personally experiences, can be flavored by mythic tones in all sorts of ways. So come and journey with me and arrive with me for a while. I'll start with arrival number one, which maybe is an obvious one. It was sitting in the airport coffee shop with a steaming cup and an open journal. And here I was, able to write an exhausted, I'm here sort of entry with terrible handwriting and even worse grammar and probably not a lot of meaning. But I was consciously doing what I could to cast the first spell of arrival. And so for those of us who are parents and have traveled with children, you realize for a moment the ultimate luxury of the solo traveler. And so when my friend Fiona, who was coming to pick me up at the airport, was panicked that she was late, she was stuck on the terrible M3 traffic trying to get to me, I assured her that I was just fine. I mean, I felt badly for her, but I was so content because there I was pulling out the same journal that has been coming with me to Ireland since 1997. And I was right back to being the 18-year-old I was when I first flew into that airport to visit an American boyfriend during his semester abroad. Well, I almost felt just like her. As I rooted into my bag for just the right pair of glasses, I couldn't help but laugh at myself. And the way that I might have still felt like that wide-eyed young creature, but I had become the woman who traveled with four different pairs of eyeglasses. So the good news was that I would definitely be able to see where I was headed, whether it was up close or far in the distance, or in the sunshine that would follow us around every day of this trip. I had arrived, and I was able to write it down. And that was a big deal, even if the words probably ended up being meaningless. The second moment of arrival, well, it comes down to food, because we know food is grounding, of course, right? And the airport croissant that I had didn't offer nearly enough fuel. So we pulled over to a big complex at the side of the motorway, and there were so many choices. But what I chose was Supermax chicken without sauce and fries without salt. It was a strange choice, but it was so obvious that in that moment, I didn't have a clue about how to nourish myself. So I just fed myself on nostalgia. For those of you who don't know, Supermax is essentially the Irish equivalent of McDonald's. I was just really committed to the possibility that fat and carbs were going to be keeping me going because I'd already been awake for 26 hours and I did not have the ability to make any good choices. Luckily, the third arrival was tinged with the sacred because this was when I first placed my feet on a bit of truly hallowed ground. So we'd been driving from Dublin on our way to Mayo, and we were driving through Roscommon. And that's when we realized that Rathcrohan, the royal seat of Queen Maeve, was right there on the road. So I'd been there several years before, back in 2018, and I was trying to tell Fiona about our guide, Mike, who had actually grown up in the area and had given tours of the area for years. But it just happened that it was a really rare treat to have his perspective on the mounds in Awenicott, that cave of cats I mentioned before, the birthplace of the Morrigan, because Mike had actually moved away by 2018. But it was just pure luck that he was in town, in the country, the very week we were there. But so jet-lagged and full of strange food, when I tried to convey this story to Fiona while stepping out of the car, I announced that this lovely guy had actually moved to New Zealand to open a car park. What? Yeah. I said, he moved to New Zealand to open a car park. And Fiona just looked at me. And then we just burst into such laughter. I was trying to talk about how he had opened some sort of adventure park with his girlfriend or something. It wasn't a story I even knew particularly well. In that moment, body was stepping out of car into car park. And so I just kind of put those ideas together. At that moment, Fiona and I realized we had the same strange and wonderful sense of humor. And we were going to get on famously during the second part of our trip, when, on the other side of the Bard Mythology Summer School, we would head off together, northward, for an epic road trip through Sligo, Donegal, County Down, Antrim, Armagh, and back to Dublin. But we didn't know that yet. What we knew was that we were giggling and chortling our way up Maeve's Mound. So if you know anything about this famed Queen of Connacht, the one who figures so prominently in the Tán Bó Cúalnge, the Queen of Connacht was known for all of her sovereign, noble power, as well as her unbridled sexuality and sensuality. But based on what we experienced in that moment, I'm going to dare to believe that she also had a hell of an embodied, earthy sense of humor as well. There was this feeling that she wanted us to be laughing there. Because you can arrive on a sacred site with reverence, but sometimes you worship with tears of hilarity running down your face. So I haven't given you much context as to who this Fiona is. You've actually met her if you are a frequent Knotwork listener. She came and told us the fabulous story of Bid the Unbiddable earlier this year. And Fiona is a brilliant, brilliant being with a PhD in botany and a mind for mythology and a sense of the land and a heart so much bigger even than the land of Ireland itself. And she and I had cooked up this scheme to travel together, and we had the best time. And so when I told Fiona that I was working on this episode and that I was going to try to tell the story about the car park reference, I was a little nervous because, I mean, I have no idea how you're receiving this right now. There's a very good chance, I just have to say, he moved to New Zealand to open a car park. And then there's dead air. And I just have to say something like, you know, I guess you had to be there. But I hope it just stands in and reminds you of one of those ridiculous road trip moments you had where one catchphrase carries you through 10 days. But in this case, what I most loved was Fiona's response. And she didn't really focus much on whether or not you'd get the joke. Instead, she wondered whether John O'Donohue, who incidentally was involved in some of the first Bard summer schools decades ago, whether John O'Donohue thought about the importance of a shared love of car parks when he wrote about what it means to find an Annum Cara. Because yeah, that's what I've got in Fiona, and I'm so grateful for that. And it just reminds me that with any good, good friendship, you keep finding yourself arriving at a sweeter, more hilarious level all the time. And we did in that moment at Rathcrohan, and we keep doing it. And yeah, cheers to friendship and gratitude and arriving in that gratitude. So back to the road, back to the trip, back to the fourth arrival. They'll go a little faster from here, I hope. That evening, Fiona dropped me off at the home of a college friend who lives in a small town not far from Westport in County Mayo. And I arrived into the most beautiful sense of domestic chaos and deep, deep family love. Her three gorgeous kids, all under 8, adopted me immediately. And there we were reading stories and exploring their gardens full of their little sacred fairy glens. And we bonded instantly. I'd left home to step out of my mama energy, but it was pure magic to be welcomed as the sort of auntie person and get anchored into the moment by three children who all wanted to try to sit on my lap at once. So I had arrived in Lewisburg to clouds, but the next morning was clear, and there was Crowpatrick standing sentinel outside my bedroom window. This iconic mountain, which you may know, is the site of such focused Christian worship, including the tradition of walking up the hill barefoot in honor of Patrick. But a friend of mine shared that this peak's older name is Cruachan Eagle, Eagle Mountain. And so this was really a moment of just feeling simply welcomed by the land as that mountain appeared. A little later in that morning, after my friend and her family had gone off to start their day, I had time to shower and reorganize my bags, all while blasting the Saw Doctors on my phone. My sixth arrival came with these guys. Now, they're the quintessential Galway band, and they wrote some fabulous songs about Mayo, too. And back in the 90s and early 2000s, they'd come and play at the Melody Tent on Hyannis on Cape Cod, where I'm from. And they'd always sell out because all the Irish kids who were there for the summer working on their J-1 visas scooped up the tickets immediately. I finally did get there one year. In fact, I think it was that same summer that I got those tickets that I met my friend, Mairead. Now, she has a gorgeous voice. And the night before, as I was going to bed, she sang those iconic lines to me. Will you meet me on Clare Island? Summer stars are in the sky. We'll get the ferry out from Runa and wave all our cares goodbye. Now, I hadn't thought of that song in years. And as far as I was concerned, it was just a lovely tune. But that day, I was about to hitch a ride to the Runa Ferry and go to Clare Island. And suddenly, a younger version of me understood the lyrics that I'd yelled along with the band, and the timelines intermingled, and a bit more integrated, I arrived once again. The seventh arrival? Okay, well, first, it's probably misleading for me to have said that I hitched a ride to the ferry. That sounds like it was much more adventurous than it was. I was not standing on the side of the road with my bags and a thumb out. Instead, Mairead's gorgeous mom gave me a lift to the harbor, and she insisted on helping me get my bags out of the boot, and then we waved farewell. And I was, for the very first time, on my own on this trip. So I climbed onto the O'Malley's ferry with one of the folks that I'd met previously in some of the online bard programs they run throughout the year. And that's when I felt myself stepping into my professional energy. I was there as the woman with the podcast, the woman who gets to talk about the myths of Ireland but tends to do it from 3,000 miles away. I got to arrive as someone who was here to do it in real life. The eighth arrival, stepping into Gráinne Whale House. This was the place where we'd spend 3.5 days of the bard. And by night, it was actually the place that was also the Grá wine bar. As you might know, Grá is love in Irish. I walked into that room and I gave and received so many hugs from so many people who I'd only known on the screen. There were the people I'd met specifically through the bard, as well as those I'd met through mutual friends and connections and who'd been on the podcast. Tracy O'Connor, Mari Kennedy, Karina Tynan, as well as the founders of the bard itself, Ellen O'Malley Dunlop and Sandy Dunlop. It was a feeling of being received by a chosen set of soul companions. I've never been on this island. I'd never been in a bard circle in real life, but I felt like I was home. The ninth arrival, I guess it's a little bit more routine. It's what we all do at some level, what we're traveling. I would have to arrive again to myself in the mundane sense when I found myself in the quiet of my room at the B&B, doing all those awkward rituals of a traveler who's grown a bit rusty. Somehow it was harder to stay clear and organized when it was just me in a room with two beds. But I was able to sort out how to stash the suitcase and still access the sink. And I flopped down on the bed that we mine for three beautiful, though very often sleepless, nights. I was here. I had a first moment to think in quiet. I was here. My 10th arrival, the next day, was the arrival in the fullness of my anxiety. That's when I learned that they only take cash at Mary Agnes's B&B. And there's one other crucial thing is that there was no ATM on Clare Island. When I was in Ireland last year, I brought home most of the euros I'd gotten out of the bank because you could tap your card anywhere, even at the smallest pub, and we stayed at hotels rather than bed and breakfasts. So that naive, I always meant to be a good girl, arrived, and she realized she was unprepared, and the perfectionist soul was on fire with shame. Now, this is the sort of feeling that catapults you out of arrival and belonging, of course. But still, acknowledging that feeling is part of arriving. You need to acknowledge and integrate all the parts of yourself to be fully present, right? The 11th arrival, thank goodness, brought relief. It was when I realized that all I had to do was ask, and knew of friends would assure me that yes, there was a way, and yes, of course they'd help. There were five of us staying at the Cash Owen B&B, And our wonderful host, Oliver, drove us early that morning in the B&B's van so that we could stop at the shop that was also the post office. So here's a hot tip. If you find yourself in a similar situation, you can withdraw cash from any post office in Ireland, but only if you have a Bank of Ireland or AIB account. And so to this, I say, I'm so grateful to my friend Orla. She's a brilliant healer and visionary who I think is going to be coming on Knotwork soon. I'm excited to introduce you. She was the one who blended those ancient arts of friendship and care with the modern phenomenon that is having a PayPal account, so I could quickly reimburse her after she pulled money out of her own accounts to cover me. I was held and I was cared for. There was no need for self-recrimination, for that lack of pure self-reliance that I felt that I was supposed to be able to sustain. I could settle into the fact that I was indeed supported by community and I'd arrived in hands and arms that would hold me. So 12, of course, is a sacred number. And so it feels more than perfect that it is reserved for my baptism in the sea. I was welcomed by Mama Ocean and all the worries were washed away. The only time I'd been in the Irish Atlantic was at about 1 a.m. off the coast of Dingle, fully clothed after a wild after-hours lock-in at Bagley's Pub in 1999. Now, this particular swim and the several others that followed during my time on Clare Island was long, long overdue and such pure magic. Crystal clear Mediterranean-like waters, looking out to the mountains, including that shimmering Kirkpatrick. Oh, Mama Ocean, I could say, I am here. Thank you for welcoming me in. Me, Lipwekis, I needed your fulcha. The 13th arrival would come a couple of days later, because those days when we were really deep into the work with the bard was a glorious blur. But it was the end of our last full day on the island that my arrival got wheels. So you know that phrase, it's like riding a bike, right? We all know that for a reason. But it isn't just the way your body remembers to balance in that moment, at least not for me. In getting on that bike on Clare Island, it was like becoming once again the 20-year-old who rode a bike across Inishmore for the first of many times during my visits to the Aran Islands. Because there's a theme here of arriving back to my young adventurer self, right? I've named her a few times. The one who only had to be concerned with shaping her own experience and imagining her own future. She was the princess that I would write about in The Sovereignty Knot. She was the young woman whose only responsibilities truly were for herself. But again, remember where this particular story started, with that conversation I had with Tracy Chipman, which was ostensibly about my own experiences as a mother. In that conversation, we got to explore what it would mean for me to arrive in Ireland as a mother, because that would so certainly be a key part of my experience, even as I traveled without children. Because that bike ride, it took me to the 14th arrival. It took me to the core of my identity as a mother, now and across time. My friends and I biked to St. Bridget's Abbey, which is where Grainne Whale was buried. You may know her as Grace O'Malley, the pirate queen who sat down and negotiated with Elizabeth I. Now, the abbey itself is stunning. There are medieval paintings on the ceiling that really feel so much more like ancient cave art. Pure, pure. Like a window into a past that's so much further back than 1,000 years. There's all these mighty beasts and hunters and warriors. It was magical, like I said, but the moment of really potent arrival happened after. I followed my friends because we were doing that quiet thing you do at sacred sites, right? When you give each other space, but generally follow along together. And following their lead, I entered the more modern church beside the old abbey. Now, before we left town and before my Wi-Fi connection cut out, because I did not get my cell phone to work in Ireland, and that was a brilliant, brilliant choice this time. I have seen a number of WhatsApp messages from my kids. They said things like, Mom, when can you talk? And Mom, I need you. Both daughters were texting, and my little one just wasn't okay. And at the moment when I'd seen those texts, I'd put it out of my mind because I could do that calculation that all parents must do at various points about whether this really is an emergency and when you can trust that there are caring adults in their presence who would have contacted me if something was truly, truly wrong. But here in the silence of this church, where people certainly still gather every Sunday, beside the statue of Mary and the painting of Bridget, everything hit. The fear and the reality, grief and the prayer, all wove together. Now, my mom and my Nana, who I mentioned many times in this show in various forms, they offered me a deep and abiding trust in the BVM. The Blessed Virgin Mother was only a Hail Mary away, right? And then Bridget had been my own guide since I chose her name at my confirmation. Because for all that I stepped away from Catholicism right around the time that I first set foot on Irish soil, there are still the deeper forces, the wild, loving, feminine forces that endure, that come from the land and that still show their faces inside the churches because they are indeed immortal. And I was wrapped in their presence. Because as I was standing there, arriving at a church on a tiny island off the west of Ireland, I also could trust that my dad and my stepmom, who were taking care of my kids, were doing their absolute best, and that my husband could go out to Cape Cod where they were and bring them home if necessary. And also in the presence of the Blessed Mother and Bridget, and in the absence of my own mother, there was that irrefutable knowledge that if my mom were still here, it would all be different. If my mom were with my kids, then maybe they'd be okay in that very moment. So much magical thinking was happening in this moment. If my mom had been there during my kids' childhood, I would have had the freedom to travel to Ireland so much more often. But you see, I'd lost my mother 15 years before, when my oldest daughter was 8 months old. And in fact, the anniversary of her death fell right in the middle of this trip. And so I was carrying grief, albeit unknowingly, already. And now I was carrying a new grief as I worried about my children. But here I was able to arrive in the fullness of a grief, aspects of which I don't think I ever allowed myself to feel over all the years of keeping it together for my children. Here I was, a mother without her children in this moment, able to feel all the sorrow and the rage that my own mom had been taken too soon, and then to send the prayers asking for help and help and more help. The friends I was with on this island had already shown such generosity and care that now I had the courage to ask for the same sort of generosity and care from the unseen, from my own beloved dead. In this moment of weeping, I arrived in Ireland as a true expression of myself, a motherless daughter who was also a mother of daughters. I arrived in the beautiful, exquisite pain and glory of being alive, even though we live in a life that's marked by death. But damn it, Mom, why aren't you here? That was setting me up for the 15th arrival. Because the tears broke through some of the oldest dams within my heart. And I sobbed my way out of the church and let the tears fall on the fuchsia hedges and in the roses that grew rambling all across the stone walls. And then I found my breath and my eyes cleared. And I made my way back through the crowded churchyard. And I made my way back toward my friends. And that's when I saw it. A Canadian flag. My mom's parents were from the Canadian Maritimes. Our yearly trips to Prince Edward Island were our own sacred pilgrimage to experience the specialness of island life. Mom and Nana, Mary and Bridget, they were all looking out for us. And here was the flag to prove it. It was here and then that I was able to tell my friends Orla and Donna that I'd just achieved the 17th arrival. And I was able to thank them for holding the space I needed to truly, truly arrive. It was the fulfillment of that spell that I had woven on Tracy's podcast weeks before. And Orla actually remarked on the way that it was really amazing I'd been keeping track in that way. And I admitted that I hadn't really realized that I was, but it just felt true in my bones. The truth is, I was probably taking a little bit of poetic license there by declaring that that was the 17th moment. But as it's a special number in my family, it felt right. Now, as I do a more conscious accounting, I realize it was in the ballpark, and there were two more deeply important arrivals to come. The 16th arrival, it was the pull back to the B&B and the privacy I needed to get my little family of four on a FaceTime call and hopefully see that everybody was on the same page. Because over the last several days, all of us at the Bard had been occupied with a single pressing question. Can we avert war? We were working with the stories and the people who appear in Ireland's Book of Invasions, the Luar Gavala Éireann, which you've heard me mention many times in this show before. Because Ireland does not actually have a creation story. Instead, it has a series of five different waves of arrival or migration or invasion, depending on who's translating it. And we were really looking for at whether or not it would be possible to avert the war that came when the Sons of Mill arrived on the shores. They were the final arrival and became the precursor to the Gaels of today. In addition to that, we were also working with the idea of the Fifth Province. And that's a space at the center of the land of Ireland that's dedicated to right rulership and identifying and representing the needs of all the other parts of the nation. It's this sort of strange, miraculous thing where a country that's cut up into the quarters actually has five pieces. Now, it's a powerful concept, but it really took on a profound sense of practical importance as I spoke with my husband and my girls. I did all that I could to give each one of us the space to express our own needs and interests. Perhaps you could say it was much like each of us was one of the four provinces of Ireland. And in that moment, I really felt the presence of all I'd learned about listening and communication, about witnessing and sensitively expressing one's own perspective. That really had been so much a part of the Bard over the days that I'd been there. And that enabled me to hold what felt like Fifth Province energy. It gave me the ability to hold space for some sort of peace that would get my girls through missing their parents and their dog and their routine and dealing with a host of other things that had been in their hearts before this particular summer trip had begun. It felt like an in-the-moment application of the wisdom that I'd come to the island to learn without even knowing I ever needed it. I was not due to arrive home for six more days, but I felt a sense of doing good work as a mother, even from 3,000 miles away. And a confidence that though the challenges would persist and maybe the girls wouldn't have the time of their lives, they were in loving hands and everyone would be okay until I was back on the 17th of the month. But it wasn't the 17th of July yet. I still had the 17th arrival and six more days of magic and exploration ahead of me. At another time and place, probably in my Substack, I'll tell you more about my travels with Fiona. But you can see a lot of the images and the stories based on the archetypal landscapes that we explored in my recent Substack post that I called Explore a Landscape Both Mythic and Real. I'll link to it in the show notes, and hopefully you're already a subscriber to Myth is Medicine. But first, I want to tell you about a party, the 17th arrival. Our B&B that I mentioned before with our wonderful hosts, was just up the hill from Ellen and Sandy's. Now, this remarkable couple, they're the ones who founded the Bard Summer School 30 years ago. And our final night was at their home with a home-cooked feast. And then, after that, the poetry and the music and the laughter. As that full buck moon of July rose over the water and peeked through the windows, we all gathered in the living room. The confident singers and those with the tremble in their voices, I'm definitely part of the latter. But gosh, I love the moments when I can gather the courage for the one song I trust myself to sing for a crowd. That old one, Red as the Rose. Yeah, we spent hours together on those couches and on the floor. And all I could think about, in addition to just feeling so fully present and so fully arrived, was that I wanted everyone I loved, especially my husband and my girls, my dad and my stepmom, to feel this kind of joy in community, where it's not about skill or performance ability. It's about being there, about sharing joy, about offering attention, about being in love with all that surrounds you. Arrived. Arrived. 17 times arrived. For sure. For sure. For sure. Thank you for coming with me on that particular journey. It feels much more of a risk to share this personal of a story on the show, and I really appreciate your presence and listening to it. I'd love to hear your stories of Ireland, your own travels, what it's taken for you to arrive. The best place to do that is over on my Substack, Myth is Medicine, where I'll create a post specifically for this particular podcast episode. But just know that hearing from you means the world. And whether that's whether you're leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform, you're supporting the show financially by being a paid subscriber on Substack, whether you're a member of one of my writing communities, whether you're somebody who just sends me a note and leaves a comment, there's no just in that. That's a big deal. And that is that sense of community and arrival that I want to be able to foster in so much of our everyday life. It's easy to lose track sometimes and focus on the peak moments and the big trips and feel as if the mundane may not offer us the same sort of magical arrival possibilities. But really, we're being invited to arrive onto the piece of the planet that holds us every day through our work lives, through our creative lives, through our lives as parents and caregivers, as friends, of simply being a child of this earth. Whether you're going to go outside and put your feet in your yard and really feel the grass beneath your soles, whether you can go and chat up a tree in your neighborhood, or just look up to the sky and arrive underneath that great dome of possibility that holds us all, I invite you to find a moment of arrival for yourself today and to recognize that arriving is an art that sometimes comes easy and sometimes takes a hell of a lot of practice. And almost certainly doesn't happen instantly in one moment. Thanks for listening. Mila Buikas. I hope we'll have a chance to connect some way soon. Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform. And do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.